his very first move as the executive was to sign Lamar Odom, who was on crack.
Stay in your lane.
I'm just curious.
I don't even worry about her over there.
Kwame Brown is gone. The City of Angels, Hollywood, just should be celebrating. Throw a parade already, whether you win a championship or not. This man was a bona fide scrub.
Let me tell you something right now. I look like I want the finals for LeBron James more than LeBron James wants.
You do. I agree with
based
that.
Based on what we saw, particularly last
that's
night.
Deep and true.
Go to Portland, I'm going to get all the free Nike stuff I want. If I go to San Antonio, I'm going to get a bunch of churros.
What kind of women are in San Antonio?
Oh, some big old women.
What up? You already know what it is. Tony in the field coming at you on May 17th, 2018. Preston Highfield, a.k.a. The Field. Big Tony. A.K.A. Tony, A.K.A. AP, holding it down in the Big Easy. And there's a lot to talk to today. We're going to be talk about today, I should say. We're going to be joined by our special guest and one of my current roommates, Don Mosland, who is making an appearance at the infamous Shasta trip this weekend. And he's leaving tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. as we tape this on Thursday evening. So he's going to preview Shasta for us, folks. And if you're a student on the West Coast, you know exactly what that means.
Yeah, you don't want to miss that. Chief, let me interrupt you real quickly. What's the cutoff age for people going to Shasta? Like, okay, now, the fraternity brother that comes back when he's like 30, that's one thing, right? But like, Don has a 9-to-5 now, and he's, what, 24? And the dude is still going to Shasta?
Not only is he still going, he's making his first ever appearance, actually.
That's incredible, man.
I don't really know what the cutoff age is. The thing about Moss is he's foreign and leaving the country in a couple months and just doesn't really care what anyone thinks, which is an awesome trait to have.
Sure is.
And so he's just kind of going for it. Also, he's got a couple buddies on the tennis team, I think, who are going. But yeah, we will ask him about that, actually. We'll ask him what it'll be like to be a 24-year-old. We'll also do a post-Shasta recap with Moss, by the way. And just see how it all went.
If it's going to be dirtier than a fraternity bathroom.
As long as he comes home alive. All right. What else we got today? The conference finals. The West actually getting spiced up. A little interesting with the Rockets taking game two. Then the East, definitely interesting with the Celtics winning the first two games. Protected home court. We'll get into all that. Rachel Nichols says Kyrie Irving is a top 10 player. AP and I rarely, if ever, disagree on a topic, but we can disagree respectfully, and we'll see what happens when we get to the Kyrie thing. I know AP, you think he's definitely not a top 10 player, right?
I'm about to unleash. I cannot wait to see you tomorrow at 10 Eastern on Undisputed.
And then we got sports gambling, now legal. Brian Windhorst weighing in with an article that had a couple interesting takes there. Scott Frost versus Nick Saban. Scotty Frost, baby. UCF Bama, it's never going away. Then a new segment that we're bringing to the table called the Will Cain Court of Law. You guys have probably seen this dude on ESPN. We're trying to save the industry, AP, and this segment will help us accomplish that.
Yeah, I think this is just another civic duty by us to call out the frauds in the industry, to hashtag save the industry, and Will Cain is one of the most frequent repeat offenders out there.
And
it's
then
our
finally,
it's our job to protect this industry.
It is. Hashtag save the industry. Feel free to use that hashtag when you're chiming in or at Tony in the Field on all social media channels, including Instagram, where our following is just booming right now.
All digital platforms.
And thanks to the folks back home listening. Okay. Oh, and then finally, our fake tough guy segment, Eastern Conference version. We'll get to that a little bit later. But first, AP, let's talk sports, as we do at times on this podcast. Dub Nation goes down for the time being. 127-105 in game two. Rockets moved the ball well. I haven't seen the Dubs kind of on skates like that defensively in quite a while. Obviously, the Rockets are a really good team. And their two stars didn't even play that well. I mean, Harden still had 27 and 10, but he was like 3 of 15 for 3 or something like that. But it was the role players for the Rockets, especially the shoe legend, P.J. Tucker, who was knocking down shots. He had a playoff career high, I believe it was, 22 points. Trevor Ariza with 19 and Eric Gordon off the bench with like 27 or something like that. Let's just start kind of basic. What was your big takeaway from game two?
Well, in general, the Warriors did what they needed to do. They needed to win one. They took game one convincingly. And so they already stole back home court right then and there. As a Warriors fan, I feel good moving forward. I'm not too concerned. And I think the Warriors will obviously play a lot better at home. Game two breakdown in specific. Yeah, the Rockets just flat out outplayed them. The Warriors did not show up with the needed intensity and did not make enough shots. Steph and Klay both played terribly. Durant obviously showed up because that guy is just a freak and unstoppable, but the rest of the guys definitely need to play better. And the other thing that I'm going to mention is no slight to the Rockets either. I mean, the Warriors didn't play their game, but it's not like the Rockets played a mediocre game. They played really well. And anytime that guys like Ariza, Tucker, and Gordon, if all three of those guys are going to go 20-plus, which is essentially what they did, you're probably going to win that game, right? Because Harden's going to get his, Paul's going to get close to a 20-10 game. But if the rest of those guys ball out like they did and start hitting 40-foot fadeaways, then you're probably going to win that game if you're the Rockets. So that's just kind of how it went. I'm Anthony Piccinelli, and those are the facts.
Nice sign off there. Do you think Draymond should have punched someone in the throat just to kind of fire the team up?
Maybe not in the throat. Maybe another takedown, another John Cena Undertaker from the top shelf takedown, or perhaps a punch to the chest or a shove or something. I don't know, man. Like I mentioned, they just didn't come out the way they needed to, and they weren't making shots, and the defense was bad. It happens, though. Good teams lose on the road. It's the NBA. You can get blown out any single night in the NBA. This is what I've been talking about forever, is that any team is capable of blowing out any other team on any given night in the NBA. That's just how much talent there is, and especially a team as talented as Houston. It happens. The Warriors lost one real quickly. The Warriors lost one on the road to San Antonio. They lost one on the road to New Orleans. So they're not invincible by any means. They're going to lose games. But again, it's a best of seven series, and I feel good about them going back home.
Yeah, I mean, the three-point shot has created so many lopsided results. Like, you'll if a team's hot from three, they might beat you by 25. It doesn't mean they're 25 points better than you. It means that they hit a bunch of threes that night. And
that's a really good point.
And the Warriors were uncharacteristically not shooting the ball well from three, especially Steph, who I think was like 1-for-8 from three. I have a couple big takeaways. Number one, Rockets, you know, they moved the ball really well. They moved without the ball better than they did in game one. They're also doing this thing, and it's been my theory for a long time. And again, like I don't want to be looked at as the Steph hater because that's not what I am. But when you have four guys who are unbelievable defenders in the Warriors starting lineup, the smart thing to do would be to go at the guy who's not a great defender, which is Steph, and the Rockets did that 23 times last night, which according to some ESPN stats was the most Steph has been gone at, the most he's been a primary defender the whole postseason. It obviously worked really well. And the Dubs were doing this thing where they would like kind of like double rotate so that Steph wouldn't have to guard whoever was getting screened for. But it only worked some of the time, and the Rockets would eventually swing the ball around. And of course, they did hit some crazy shots. Like that one Eric Gordon shot from the sideline with Draymond in his face was pretty nuts, although the game was pretty much over by then. But what do you think about the Rockets going at Steph? They haven't made a secret of it. D'Antoni's even flat out said, you know, in postgame, that's exactly what our game plan is. That's what we want to do. What can the Warriors kind of do to stop that? Because let's be honest, I mean, if it's Harden or CP3 dancing against Steph, it's advantage Rockets. In the same case that it would be if Steph had the ball on offense versus one of those guys, although Chris Paul's a better defender than Steph. Chris Paul's a really good defender for a guy his size. But, you know, what do you think the Warriors can kind of do in that situation? And don't you think it's a good strategy? I mean, it's something that I've been saying for a long time, and that you have to have the skill to do it, but the Rockets certainly do have the skill to do it.
So I don't think that you're crazy by any means for this theory. I saw you were getting a decent amount of flack for this on Twitter, and I don't think that this is like by any means just, you know, an idiotic strategy. I think it largely depends on what happens before they go to that. So the Rockets were moving the ball way better last night than they were in the first game, right? I mean, those are just the facts. So they move the ball.
Right.
They get better shots. And in the process, they get a switch where they get one of their players on Steph. Yeah, that's good stuff. Now, if their only offense is James or Chris Paul dribbling up and dribbling for like 10 seconds and then saying, hey, someone come set me a screen, whoever's on Steph's guy, so I can get the switch, that's bad. Like, that's not, in the grand scheme of things, that's not going to win games, and that's why they didn't win game one, is because they just tried to do that too often. And by that time, no one else is touching the ball. No one else is moving. Everyone is out of rhythm. And if they get a good shot, they do. If not, then they almost are certainly going to get a bad shot with no time on the shot clock left. That's where that strategy is not effective. It's effective if you move the ball and if you don't get a good shot right away and other guys have the ball in their hands. They've had touches. They're in rhythm. They're cutting. They're ready to offensive rebound. Then you start to get that switch going and it'll work a lot better. The Cavs did it. Have done it in the most recent finals versus Golden State. I'm not saying it's a terrible offensive strategy. That's what the Cavs and the Rockets have been doing to attack Golden State because they're so good defensively, especially the other four positions.
Yeah.
But to just simplify it to what the Rockets did in game one, where they only did that without any sort of other offensive principles or moving the ball, then it's not going to work.
Yeah, I mean, their offensive output wasn't terrible in game one either. The thing that I didn't like is what they did is they did the thing where they ISO'd Steph, and it worked a lot. I mean, like, Harden had an amazing game, but...
It works a lot, but no one else gets involved.
But, well, if he dribbles for, like, 15 seconds and then does it, which is what I thought they did a lot in game one. In game two, people were, like, cutting off the ball a lot. Like, usually they kind of stand in the corner or whatever. Sometimes, you know, it's laughable. You'll literally see, like, three Rockets right next to each other, like, in the corner. It's like, well... You don't have to really respect that if, like, they're all clumped together in the corner. But they all moved off the ball. Like, especially Tucker and Ariza, like, moved off the ball super well last night while, you know, a play like that was going on, which, like, so, you know, Harden drives, whatever, gets a step on Steph, and then Draymond comes over, and then that's when they whip the ball around. And so if you do that early enough in the shot clock, I still think it's a good strategy. But so that was one thing I noticed. The other thing I noticed is, you know, Durant's, I mean, like we both agree, he's unstoppable. I think LeBron will probably become the NBA's all-time leading scorer one day, and then Durant will probably pass him one day if they both keep up the, you know, the pace that they're on. He's incredible. He's pretty much unstoppable, unless you make, you know, you put a hand in his face from three and then you just kind of pray at that point. Even sometimes then it doesn't really work. But do you think it's smart, or at least the best strategy, for Houston to let Durant get his, but kind of in an ISO situation? They call a lot of ISO plays for Durant, or at least they just give the ball to Durant a lot of, like, a wing or something like that, and let him go to work, because he usually has like a CP3 or a whoever on him that he can just blow by. Do you think it's almost smart for the Rockets to do that and let Durant get 35 a game, but almost in an ISO fashion? Because what makes the Warriors so dangerous, in my opinion, and pretty much everyone's opinion, is their insane ball movement and their shooters. And if they're just kind of ISOing Durant, it obviously takes away that. There's just some, like, magic that you kind of create when everyone's involved and everyone's shooting and everyone's touching the ball. And that gets taken away a little bit if Durant's ISOing a lot. Again, he's one of the best players in the world. He can get a bucket, but it stops others from getting involved a little bit, like what you were saying, kind of the Rockets strategy is. What do you think about that, letting Durant ISO a lot?
Yeah, I'm not so sure that they're... I mean, I see what you're saying from a strategy standpoint. I'm not so sure that they're doing that on purpose, as opposed to, like, they're just focusing in on Steph and Clay a lot, like grabbing them on screens, trying to, you know, use a lot of physicality and bump them off so that they don't get open looks, which is great. It is. But if Durant's going to get his regardless. So if the other stuff is not falling for Steph and Clay, again, they both had terrible games last night, then Durant's going to start to take over, and he had 38. And I don't think that that's like, okay, D'Antoni and the rest of the Rockets saying, Durant can get his, but the rest of these guys, we got to shut them down. It's more of like, all right, well, the other options just aren't there tonight, and Durant's taking over, but it's a little bit too late, and it's too little. So, you know what I'm saying? Like, Durant's going to get his regardless. When the Warriors are scary and they're at their best and you're just not going to beat them is when the rest of the guys come along for the ride. And Steph, again, he's coming back from injury right now. He's still trying to get his legs feeled out. Usually him and Durant, when they're both at their best, will carry the load. And then if Klay and Draymond show up, then you're really in trouble. But right now, Durant's obviously going to give you that high production. The Warriors aren't, I mean, the Rockets, I'm sure, aren't okay with it, but I just think that it's one of those things where, all right, we're trying to shut down the other guys as well, and if they're not on,
yeah.
I mean, it's just what it is.
Yeah. I don't know about the whole, I mean, I totally get the Steph was injured for a while. I don't know if that's like a valid excuse at this point. I mean, he looked pretty good against the Pelicans. What do you think's up with him? Two of 13 from three in this series. What do you think? I mean, some of those shots were tough, but he had a couple shots where he, you know, he didn't have a guy right in his grill. What do you think, he's just kind of missing and just not in a groove yet, or what?
I don't think that he's still hurt. That's not what I'm saying. I just think that he still needs to find like his true Steph rhythm. And it's tough when you come back in the middle of the second round and try to do that, as opposed to like if he'd even had one or two games before the regular season ended to try and come back and do that. So it doesn't look like he's hurt. It looks like he might be, if anything, just like a little slower, a little less explosive, just trying to like, you know, test out that knee and get back to stability. I just think that he's off rhythm.
Okay. And those are just the facts. That's fine. Yeah, I agree. I think he's just kind of coming. Obviously, he's not playing his best offensively right now. It'll be interesting to see what happens at home. I'm a big fan of the desperation theory, the you can't fake desperation. Obviously, Golden State will be considered, you know, the more desperate team in Game 3 coming off a loss. I think Game 3 will probably go the Warriors' way, and maybe, I don't want to say easily because, man, the Rockets are good, but I think Game 4 is going to be like the crazy game of this series.
For sure.
So we'll see what happens. The East, AP. Bron, 42-12-10 in a double-digit L. And my guy, Kevin Love, shout out Lake Oswego, Oregon, had a great game as well. Big double-double, and they still took that double-digit L because no one on the Cavs has played well this series, or even decent this series outside of Cleveland's big two. How you feeling about where Cleveland's at right now in this series against Boston?
To first answer your question, I am still not that concerned. I still think there's a good chance the Cavs win this. I mean, it would have been nice for them to get one on the road, but I think ultimately, look, Boston has been so sketchy on the road in the playoffs this year. And they're a young team. Cleveland always plays better at home. Not just LeBron, but the rest of those guys actually show up at home. So I think there's a really good chance that Cleveland gets this in six or seven. And I think they're for sure going to win Game 3. Game 4, they're most likely going to win. And then from there, it's just a toss-up, right? But like, I'm not too concerned that Cleveland is going to lose it. Like, I still think that they can win. I still think there's a solid chance they're going to win. But man, you got to give Boston some credit. They've been balling out without Kyrie, without Hayward. Brad Stevens is obviously doing a lot. Got to give these players some credit, like Rozier, Brown, Horford, Tatum. How about the job that Al Horford's done? That guy has been considered a fringe all-star for his entire career, and he is carrying this team right now from both a leadership standpoint and a statistical standpoint. Like, that dude is flat out balling.
Yeah, so the deal with the Celtics is they're a really, really, really balanced team. So you can't really, you know, guard just one guy. Like, Jason Tatum gets the offensive credit. He's had a pretty average series, at least in the first half so far in this series. And I mean, he's young. He's going to be a star. Like, if you can take one player from this team, I think we would all agree you'd want Jason Tatum for the next 10 years or whatever. But, you know, it's different guys like Baines, Marcus Smart, Terry Rozier.
Jaylen Brown has been balling.
Jaylen Brown has been stud. Balling. And you know what's weird is, like, and I don't want to take anything away from Jaylen Brown at all. Like, he's an absolute stud. I would love to have the guy on the Blazers. But, like, if he goes to the Magic, is he just, like, some jabroni hanging out on the Magic? Remember, like, Oladipo, like, people forgot he was in the league for a while. And then he goes to Oklahoma City and still wasn't very good, in part because of Russ, whatever you want to say. Let's just keep that argument out of it for a little bit. And then he goes to Indiana, and then he is who he is this year, like, he's probably the NBA's most improved player. Like, Do you know what I mean, though? Like, it's with what I'm trying to say is with all these Celtics players outside of Horford, who's a proven all-star, and maybe Tatum, who looks like offensively he's as gifted as any young player in the league. A lot of these guys, I'm just like, dang, okay, so is he really like a 15, 20 million a year type player, or is this just Brad Stevens being amazing? Like, look at the Isaiah Thomas example. Like, Isaiah averaged almost 30 a game and was like a borderline MVP winner. And then he go, and obviously the hip injury and all that didn't help. But
and now that dude might be
disappears overnight.
And now that dude might be washing floors over at McDonald's in a few weeks. You know, like that is crazy. No, I know what you mean. Shout out Konzo Martin, by the way, one of the worst coaches of all time. Had Jaylen Brown on his team along with another star-studded cast at Cal, and they couldn't beat Hawaii in the first round of the tournament. That guy's a fraud. And we'll call him out many other times on this show in our fraud segments, but yeah.
No, but anyways, like, yeah, I mean, as far as the way I feel about the series, like, I still...
You agree that the Cavs, there's still a very good chance they're going to win, right?
Totally. I mean, 100%. I don't think, you know, not to be like the body language doctor, but I don't, like, whenever I watch, I watch all the LeBron post-game pressers and kind of, like, base how I feel off what he has to say or the vibe that I'm getting from him anyway. It does concern me that he did have a 42-point triple-double and they got waxed, but I still don't think he's that nervous because I think he knows that if they get anything from these role players, especially at home, they're going to win no problem at home. And then on the road, they just got to steal one. And yeah, he might have to have another monster 40-point game, but someone will get loose. Maybe Korver gets loose. Maybe JR gets loose. They don't even need one person to get loose. They just need these guys to play a little bit better. And again, this is the worst cast he's had in a long time. And this is why when we go to the Kyrie thing, like, I think Kyrie's so incredibly valuable. It's like any dude who can legitimately get his own bucket in the playoffs against anyone is so valuable in the NBA. And that's basically what they're missing right now.
I agree. I mean, Kyrie is obviously a phenomenal offensive talent, and he can create his shot whenever against anyone. And they do really, really miss him. It's evident. Can we just talk about how bad J.R. Smith has been, though? Look, I've brought up J.R. Smith being a bum so many times on this show. And, of course, GM LeBron gave him that contract, just like he gave the cheater, Tristan Thompson, his big contract. Yeah. Oh yeah, dude. Come on now. Who else gave Tristan Thompson that contract?
Dude, Double T was kind of unbox outable in that against the Dubs.
Double T was their like ninth offensive option.
He's never been known for his offense.
But listen, just listen. Subpar rim protector, ninth offensive option, got a few old boards a game, and they threw max money at him. Like, dude, what in the world were they thinking? And the answer is GM LeBron just hooking his boys up with some dough, right? Look, JR is a bum, dude. I've called out JR for being a bum so many times. The guy has 4 points in two games in this series. He laid a fat goose egg last night.
And he was
2 nights ago.
And he was lost on defense, too.
He had more like, 1,000 points.
Yeah. He was so lost. He would lose whoever he was guarding. Like, I mean, I'm serious. Like, half the possessions.
I need to find the clip. I mean, and there were multiple clips. Do you remember when that was like a legitimate notion that people actually thought J.R. Smith was a good defender? It was like a few years ago when people were actually talking about J.R. Smith being a good defender.
Right after they won the title or something.
I heard legitimate talk show hosts and quote unquote sports personality figures bring up J.R. being a good defender many times. J.R. has never been a good defender, and he is one of the worst defenders in the league objectively right now. That guy, as you mentioned, always lost on defense, fouls, is always out of position, doesn't know where the rotations are. And to top it all off, like, dude, okay, you're trash. You're not good anymore. You should be in the G League, and you had a garbage night. But then for that dirty shove on Horford, like, dude, that's just unacceptable. There's just no place for that in the league. That should have been a flagrant too, by the way. He should have been suspended for that. Like, kicked out of the game right there.
I don't know about that. I mean, kicked out of the game.
Horford, dude,
it's a dirty play when it
that's ends such up. A dirty play. You know how easily you can get hurt from that? Like, that is, that's just a one of the biggest no-nos in basketball, let alone just the NBA, is you can do not touch guys when they're in the air like that already. from a dirty standpoint.
Which is like hilarious because back in the 90s or the 80s, that would have been a common foul, like for sure. There's no way they would have like teed him up or thrown a flagrant or anything. Although those were like the hip check days and the NBA was way different. Like I get it. But yeah, I mean, that was definitely a dirty play. And we both agree that he's not getting it done these days.
JR's a G League player right now, man. Just admit it. That guy needs to be playing in Lithuania for the Big Baller Brand Challenge.
Lithuania basketball. I mean, those guys aren't even close to D1 basketball players. I hope everyone realizes that.
Jello getting 82 over there or whatever it was.
Yeah, taking like 70 shots. It's like these guys, like they're probably like literally like Division III basketball players. Jello, they're probably Jello like Linfield basketball players.
Jello beating up on like the U15 Lithuanians.
Yeah, it's like come on, man.
And then Ball's Life makes an entire mixtape about it.
God, I can't remember what I was going to say. Oh, I think, let's see, what was my last point here on this series? I'll give my guy Ryan Russillo credit for this because he said it first, but I was also thinking it before he said it, and now every time I listen to Brad Stevens, I can't get it out of my head. This dude is totally modeling his aura after Bill Belichick, / he's just like a baby Bill Belichick, dude. Everything he says in post game is just like, yeah, we just need to do our job. Yeah, we just need to focus on the next game. Yeah, he's totally in the same city too. He is totally just the basketball Belichick, dude. It's incredible.
Huh, I never thought of it like that.
Listen to him talk. He is 100% the basketball Belichick. Not like as big of a curmudgeon or as grumpy, but in terms of like what he wants to get across, he's totally just a basketball Belichick. And look at like Jaylen Brown, like totally, like if you watch Jaylen Brown interviews, he totally embodies that too. He's just like, yeah, we just got to worry about the next game or whatever. It's like, dude, you're 20 or 21 or whatever, and you just beat the Cavs and to go up 2-0, and you're like not even excited. Like, he wasn't even excited.
So sick. Like, dude. No, I agree. I found that a little interesting too. I watched that that like quick post game interview they did with Brown. I was like, man, that's kind of a PR answer right there by Brown.
Okay. Rachel Nichols thinks Kyrie's a top 10 player.
Yikes.
AP, yikes. You brought this up on the outline because you disagree, I'm assuming.
I strongly disagree. I think objectively Kyrie is not a top 10 player. I mean, look, off the top of my head the other day, I was able to name 15. And then when I like did a little more digging, like I took like 10 minutes to kind of look at some things on NBA.com, I was able to name 18 guys that I would rather have than Kyrie. So I think he's a top 20. He's a phenomenal offensive talent, plays no defense, doesn't really move the ball that much. And for a scorer, there are better scorers in the NBA. So I got a list here of 18 guys. Let me know if you would rather have Kyrie than any of these guys. Okay. Right, just a fun little exercise here.
Sounds good. For the
listeners out there, let me know as well. LeBron, KD, Harden. Are you going to fool around over there? Or are we going
to? I know. I'm sorry. All right. Go ahead.
No, I like it. I like it. We like to have fun around here, folks. Okay. Just stop me if you hear a name that you don't like on the list, and we can talk about it.
Okay.
LeBron, KD, Harden, Steph, Kawhi, AD, the Greek Freak, Boogie, Westbrook, Dame. That's 10. That's 10 right there, okay? No problems
Can I just say I'm not a Boogie guy, and I actually would rather have Kyrie over Boogie. I know that sounds crazy, but...
Okay, all right. Sorry. That's fine. So that's 10 right there, all right? Okay. I left off at Dame. DeRozan, Draymond, Clay, Karl Anthony Towns, Porzingis, PG-13, Embiid, and Wall.
Ooh, yeah, I like all those guys. I don't know about... I'm just not a big John Wall guy because his jumper's super broken and he doesn't seem fun to play with, but I'd have to get back to you on the Wall versus Kyrie thing.
Okay.
I agree.
That entire list, I named 18 guys.
Yeah.
You had a problem with two. Anyone else?
Right.
Do you want me to run through it again, or did you have a problem with anyone else?
No. I don't think I did. I mean, I'm still kind of interested to see what Giannis is, but I would definitely rather have Giannis.
For sure.
Let's see. So who did I not like? DeMarcus and...
Wall and Boogie were the two guys that you say you'd rather have Kyrie over.
Yeah, I would probably take Kyrie over them. But And dude, Kyrie gets injured all the time, which is the thing that kind of freaks me out. But no, I agree. I'm with you. I'm with you here.
So
at first I wasn't. I didn't really like look at a list of top 10 players or anything like that. But let me just say that I just can't shake what he did to the Warriors back in 16 out of my head.
And he had some monster games. Yeah, against it was
unbelievable against some really good teams. Yeah, like
that's true.
I mean, it's kind of hard to like when you say like him or DeRozan, it's kind of like DeRozan's a great regular season player. I respect it. But anyway, I mean, obviously when you if you look here's how you need to judge Kyrie in my opinion. If you look at Kyrie without LeBron, what is he? And the answer is not much. He's either hurt. Or he's on a lottery team. Like the Cavs were literally a lottery team, and then LeBron got there and they turned into a finals contender slash winner. And then Kyrie left and he got hurt. So it's just like we have no idea like really how good he is. He's entertaining. He's probably top 10 in entertaining, but not a top 10 player. So what was her quote? She said he's like for sure a top 10 player or something?
It's just the typical save the industry moment where a media member will no grease here. This is just these are just the facts where a media member will try to make a bogus claim, you know, just try to like stick a hard nosed tweet out there that, you know, that signifies like I am so good at this. I know exactly what I'm talking about. Here's my point. Nothing else is good. And the point wasn't even that Kyrie's a top 10 player, but she literally put word for word, the Cavs traded a top 10 player to the Celtics in return for, you know, like whatever they got, Isaiah Thomas and Jake Clamchowder Crowder, first team all fake tough guy, and Zizic. And then they turned that into Clarkson, Nance, and blah, blah, whatever. But like, Rachel Nichols isn't the only one to say this. I've heard this so many times. Bill Simmons on his podcast with The Rant said that Kyrie is a top 6 to 10 player in the NBA. Are you kidding me? Do people understand that the basketball, not just the NBA, but basketball, is played on offense and defense, and then rebounding is thrown into the mix? There is more than just scoring. And by the way, offense means that you pass the ball too. It's assists, offensive rebounds, screens, a lot of other things go into it than just taking 10 dribbles and pulling up and making a shot. So Kyrie is a great scorer, a top 10 scorer. He's not a top 10 player.
No, I agree. I think in the NBA, offense, defense is like 75-25, like as far as value. But yeah, totally. All right. We have a very special guest joining us right now. It is my roommate, Don Mosland, who lives about 30 feet away from me in this Eugene apartment that we have going
cheap
here.
Eugene apartment.
That we have going here. Moss, what's up, man?
Yo, what's up, guys?
Yo, how's it going, dude? How's your day?
Good, good. I just got up from work, so got actually a fresh haircut right after I was out, so I'll be ready for a big weekend.
Fresh as in, like, fresh produce or fresh as in Subway fresh?
Well, I would say kind of like a mix, but for this time, just a fresh cut, you know.
That's good, because we all know about Subway's quality of freshness, those stale vegetables, that sheetrock hard bread, the fake meat that they don't give you any of.
They just bacon. Eat up for 12 seconds.
All right, Moss, so we, at the top of the show, I prefaced this by saying that we would have you on to preview an event that many, if not all, U of O students are aware of, and a lot of West Coast colleges, Shasta weekend. Okay, it's our understanding that you are partaking in Shasta weekend this weekend, starting tomorrow at 6 a.m.
Yeah, that's actually correct.
Interesting.
It's gonna be my first time there, so I'm curious how it will be. But I heard many greasy things.
Yeah. Why did you decide to go to Shasta?
I mean, as I said, I've never been, and it's my good friend Sim. His last couple of weeks in the U.S., so I thought, why not join him, you know, got to experience it, and yeah, take it off that checklist.
Don, let me ask you a question. Will CFM Daddy be there this year?
That's a good question. I mean, I haven't talked to him in a little while, but I think that he won't be there. But
if so, you're safe for now.
I will yes.
One of our loyal Tony in the Field listeners and former Tony in the Field guest, Andre Y, former Oregon football player, took to social media today to wish everyone best of luck in finding true love at Shasta this weekend. I'm curious, do you think you'll find true love at Shasta this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, I'm curious myself too. I mean, you gotta look for it. I mean, it's just if it's out there, you never know. But I'm not sure. We'll see. I'm staying a little bit conservative with that prediction of true love. But
do you know the logistics of the trip, Moss? You're leaving tomorrow. You come back Monday, I assume. Is that right?
No, we're leaving. Yeah. So I'm supposed to get picked up here at 6:30 a.m. So it'll be a grind, but then I guess we'll just drive there straight, maybe stop for some in and out, and then I hope that there will be a boat picking us up at like 1 p.m.
Uh-huh. You'll be there until Monday, right?
No, I'm leaving on Sunday.
Gotcha. Yeah, because you got Sunday. That whole job thing, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Moss, here's my question to you. What would your boss say if he found out? Like, and look, I'm sure that you told him something completely different that you were doing this weekend than what you're actually doing.
I don't know. Maybe he would be. That's a tough question, honestly. I might need some time to think about that. But
Tony's an award-winning question asker.
Yeah, I experienced that right now, actually. But no, I think he would like it.
I think he would like it.
Did you invite him?
No, I want to experience it myself first. That's my first time.
Right. Moss, what is your plan of attack here at Shasta? And you're giving us, you know, I love you, man. You're giving us generic answers. Give me something really like juicy and specific here. what's your plan of attack for this weekend at Shasta?
Plan of attack. I think, I mean, you know, I'm bringing that sambuca.
Yeah.
Which will be step one, you know, tomorrow.
Cheap Dutch liquor.
That cheap Italian liquor, yeah, exactly. And I don't know, I guess I'm just gonna look for some Estonian would say tonkinis out there. I don't know, maybe steal one of these like pink swans and just check it out in the lake for the first day and then roll from there, you know. I mean, I put a lot of greasy songs on my playlist that they put together for my boat.
Is Freaky Friday on there?
Yes, definitely.
So I expect Freaky Friday to be played a minimum of 24 times tomorrow.
If I can, I will try to do that for you. Unfortunately, I won't be able to go Instagram live for you guys, but I will.
Make sure you tag Tony in the Field in whatever you do if you can.
And one thing, guys. I mean, I mean, first of all, let me say it's an honor to be on this show. But I will remind people when I see people doing things out of control. I will remind them that save the industry, okay? Like, you guys are trying to save this industry. Like, everybody in that island. That's one of my goals this weekend. Is like everybody has to know. That's Big Tony. I call you Big Tony. And
Big Tony.
And the chief press. I'm trying to save that industry. So that's one of my things. I never know. But Yeah, I really respect you guys trying to save the industry.
And we love that, and we appreciate you being a great brand ambassador, Don. That cannot be overstated, really. That is a valuable position. So we appreciate you trying to promote the brand and promote the message as well. Hashtag save the industry. Don, I got another one for you. Now, it's no secret to anyone that's been on Shasta or even anyone who is prepared to be going on Shasta that nutrition is is going to be hard to find. So, given the choice between the two likely meals for the weekend, a cheese and cheese quesadilla, or a fake hamburger / hot dog sandwich, which of those do you think that you're going to go with?
I think I would go with a cheap hamburger. To be fair, I mean, you gotta get some protein in while you're there, you know. And I know John Don. I trust John Don. With those those cheap chicken patties and those hamburgers. So I think that's gonna be my go-to. But to be fair, I'm just gonna look out there for food and anything. Maybe I will have to eat something else. You never know.
Yeah, the cheap chicken patties become a little rubbery after they zap them in the microwave for about 10 seconds.
It's no different than what Applebee's does, folks.
Yeah, those are just the facts. My other question, you know, something else that's an afterthought is sleeping. You know, at Shasta, people don't really sleep. Are you bringing a cheap tent? What's your plan of attack for trying to get a couple of Z's in while you're there?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, actually, yesterday my buddy and I tried to set up a cheap tent.
what made it cheap?
I mean, it just doesn't look like very high quality, you know. But I mean, that's fine with us. Like we were not trying to spend a lot of time in that tent, but. We had a good practice yesterday to set it up, and hopefully it will stand up because Sin told me last night or last year it stayed up about two nights, and he just slept on some plastic the other time. So
just face down in the mud. Now here's the other thing about Shasta, is that you know, people are usually rocking little to no clothes. Are you how many Speedos are you bringing? What are the colors? Fill us in on your attire for when you're there.
Yeah, so I was lucky to be able to go actually for some shopping last night. So I'll be bringing three Speedos.
Three Speedos? Did I hear that right?
Yeah. One is yellow, like bright yellow, but I'm afraid I'm not tan enough for that yet. So I'm gonna go with a black one. I think the first day, and then second day maybe. I don't know. The other one is blue, so either black or blue, and then that last day I'm not really planning on wearing that yellow.
You're not kidding when you say this, right? Like, legitimately a Speedo?
I mean, you guys know me. I wouldn't joke about that, right?
Unbelievable. Preston, can you imagine big, greasy, oily Euro Don in the middle of these Shasta boat dance parties just rocking a skin-tight Speedo, leaving nothing to the imagination?
Leaving nothing to the imagination. I actually can. Yeah. You know, I can. I think he's going to thrive there. I really do. That's
Don, you're going to be twerking against that
boat. 24-year-old Don.
You're going to be twerking up against that boat to Freaky Friday in that bright yellow banana hammock like there's no tomorrow.
Moss, have you also considered that you should be by far the oldest person there?
No, I have actually not considered that, but yeah, I mean, I'm just gonna see. You know, I might be as Tony. I mean, they call me, they might call me Daddy. So.
Oh my god!
you never know.
It wouldn't be the first time, Moss.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, that's correct.
Oh, And if you ever want to hear, come on, man. And if you ever want to hear that story, it's not toning the field appropriate. Just make sure that you come out with us next time we're in San Diego. We'll buy you a few beers and fish tacos and bury the hatchet for all you loyal listeners out there.
Yes. Yeah, we'll set up a crowdfund for you guys to all be there in that.
A GoFundMe. Just fly everyone in. Stay in a cheap hotel. Pack it in with five people. hey, Moss. who do you got winning the French Open this year?
I mean, I got to go to my boy Nadal, obviously. I mean, there's not even a question, honestly. But yeah, he lost last week. He took some rest like the second half of the week. This week he will probably win that Rome tournament, and then next week, I mean, French Open. Of course, I will love it, but it's already decided. Trust me.
And who's gonna win the finals this year? The NBA Finals, Moss.
Ha! You gotta go with those Warriors, Tony. You know that.
Yes, sir. Golden State, baby.
I actually hope that LeBron and his, I don't even know how you call those other players, but I guess teammates, actually trying to make the finals, and that they will make it. So that Golden State will make them look like it. They will put the Odin hammer down on them. That's all I can say.
The Odin hammer.
Nice. AP, do we have any other Shasta-related questions for Moss? I'm trying to rack my brain.
I think I'm good to go there. Asked him pretty much everything that I wanted to know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess.
Cool. Oh, wait. Moss, make sure you get the word Greece trending as well. You know, some of your friends have already picked it up, which I really appreciate. We're all about, you know, pushing the brand, creating social movements here on Tony in the Field. And
spreading our jargon and our vernacular.
And Greece is one of those big, big words for us.
I know. I'm going to try my best for you guys. I know a few of my friends there will be helping me, so it should be... Should be easy to get that grease going. Otherwise, if it's just too much grease, then I'll just tell people to cut the grease.
Yeah.
And just go back to that cheese then.
All right. Well, we'll see you tonight for some cheap Winco meat and some cheap snacks.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I mean, that's just the ultimate. Like ultimate preparation, in my opinion.
AP, we're hitting up Winco tonight.
Man, that's a crime. You guys go there way too much. Wait, you guys realize that Winco is just like a cheap version of Costco, which is already on kind of the low. Like, I mean, come on, guys. You're getting fake meat over there at Winco.
I mean,
you'd be better off eating at Subway.
Yeah, I don't buy the meat at Winco, honestly. I buy the frozen gluten-free pizzas. That's about all I get. Maybe some pesto. Yeah. Kind of mix it up.
Yeah, I'm going there for the meat, Tony.
Yeah. Hey, I mean, yeah. Moss is not afraid to admit he's going there for the meats. All right, Moss, thanks for coming on, buddy. We'll see you at Winco.
It was an honor. Appreciate it.
All right. Hey, spread the word in the Netherlands about Tony in the Field so we can get this trending worldwide.
Yes, I will do some rebranding for you guys over in Amsterdam.
Sounds good. See you, buddy.
See ya.
All right, and that was your Shasta preview. We're also going to catch up with Moss for a Shasta post-game interview and just ask him how the weekend went. It's always a memorable time down there, Big Tony.
Yeah. I only went once. I was going to go twice, but I only ended up going once. And my God, that is just one hell of a weekend. I honestly think, I mean, there's a lot to say about that weekend that we can kind of recap another time just because it's just out of control and wild. And one of those things where you just got to go really to kind of understand the magnitude of the weekend, kind of like Vegas. I mean, you don't know Vegas until you've actually been to Vegas, but I think the biggest takeaway that I had from Shasta was that I had a headache for no joke 2 weeks after I got back on that Monday night. So your liver, your brain, and just about everything else in your body will be destroyed.
You were dehydrated for about 2 weeks. Just trying to roll back to basketball and just keeling over.
I had to teach myself how to shoot again. I was so so thrown off from that weekend. Yeah, I had a dribble. My first like 10 shots were all air balls. I was like, Jesus.
Like, Jesus. All right, well, hey, let's get back to it. Sports gambling now legal. A recent Supreme Court ruling basically gave states the right to legalize sports gambling. It's their choice to do it. I was reading a couple articles on this. One research firm estimates that 32 states will have it legalized within the next 5 years. I've listened to a lot of people talk about this, including Adam Silver and Mark Cuban and a bunch of former NBA players. First of all, Chris Christie, with a just trying to take all the credit for this on Twitter, was pretty funny. I was like, come on, man. I don't know if you saw his tweet. And then SVP, Scott Van Pelt, breaking it down, saying it's going to open the door to a lot of new ideas like gambling at stadiums, which would be fun. AP, Tony in the field has to find a way to profit off this.
We do. This is a $1 billion industry that we need to save, that we are saving. And a $1 billion opportunity. So I'm sure within the next 5 years that will conjure up something. Along with, of course, our main business, Tony in the Field Enterprises. And we will profit from it.
TM. Are you excited? Don't care. What's your take on this Supreme Court ruling here?
Yeah, I'm just surprised it hasn't been overturned earlier, right? I mean, I don't see what would be stopping this. Personally, I mean, you can gamble on sports online as well as on anything else. It's just obviously it's going to have to go through a non-US site. So it's kind of sketchy in that regard, but not really. A lot of safe sites out there. And then if you just go to Vegas, you can place a sports bet when you're there. So I just think that it's not like that big of a deal, really. I think it's awesome, but it's I don't think it's like anything that's that you know, people, if you wanted to bet on sports before this, there were many ways to do it, is what I'm trying to say.
Totally. Yeah, it's not like, you know, none of us were surprised and it didn't, like, change my thinking on sports betting. I wasn't, like, thinking, like, oh, my God, sweet, now I can bet on sports more. It's like, no, you can just go into Bovada or any of these websites that operate internationally or whatever that are safe, like you mentioned, that people already do a lot of. I mean, it is fun to bet on games like in person, like going to a Vegas sports book, like an MGM or something, and sit there and get a drink or get dinner and watch the game. But yeah, I mean, it doesn't really change much. Like, I guess maybe if like a sports book opened in Portland or something, that would be something fun to do for a little while. But yeah, it doesn't really affect that. What I was thinking, I read this Brian Windhorst article and. He said that like his big takeaway after talking with like a bunch of people in the NBA was that the NBA is going to make like a ton of money off of it, and other teams can too. So I guess like in the Premier League, like 2/3 of those teams have like giant casino sponsorships, and some of them are like even like right on the uniform, like literally ads on the team's uniform. So he thinks that the NBA and the NFL, well, the NFL is kind of already doing it, but the NBA. Is going to start to make like a decent amount of money off this, and then the players make money off it. Therefore, like the salary cap can go up, so it'll affect sports like in that way a little bit. I guess what I'm trying to say is it'll affect like leagues more than it'll affect like the average person on the street. Like in my opinion,
yeah, that makes sense. I agree with that. It'll just be interesting to see moving forward. You know what kind of advancements and technological improvements will be made because of this. That's what I'm really looking forward to.
I bet there's going to be just like a ton of apps that, that, you know, allow you to bet, like, you know, like the FanDuel and the DraftKings or whatever. There's probably going to just be like a ton more of those. Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
SVP said he thinks people are going to be able to just gamble in stadiums on that game. Like there's going to be a sports book in an MG in, like the Cowboys stadium or something like that. Which I guess would be kind of interesting.
Even more reason for Tim Donaghy to unretire and get back to those Lakers squads to fix a few more titles for LA.
That's gonna be the other thing is people are gonna be freaking out about like NBA refs throwing like an over under or.
By the way, if you don't think that if you don't think that those Lakers titles were fixed, I mean, you got to seriously take a long look in the mirror and wake up and smell the Java.
Smell the Java, man. Just do it. Just read. Read a book.
There's no stretch there going on. Those series were fixed.
Totally fixed. Yeah, I mean, we got people behind bars, dude. Oh, man, that's funny. All right, do we got anything else on that, or should we go Scott Frost, Nick Saban?
Scott Frost, Nick Saban. Hit it.
Scotty Frost, baby. Of course, long-time-ish assistant coach here at Oregon. Made his way to UCF, did an unreal job there, took a team that didn't win a game into a team that made a bowl, and then turned that into a team that went undefeated. UCF to there, you know, it's at first I was like, all right, this is a little bit much and kind of out of control, but I kind of think it's funny now, and I like it. UCF self-proclaimed the Natty. They made championship rings for every player and coach on that team. They hung banners that said they won the Natty.
Sure did.
Which, I mean, if you're a... And to their credit, like I said, they went undefeated and they beat a team who was, yeah, probably the third best team in the SEC last year, Auburn. And man, if you want to do that and proclaim yourself a Natty, it's funny and I think it's interesting, and you might as well do it because you didn't get the shot to play in the playoff. Got a couple quotes here. So Scott Frost was asked about kind of what Nick Saban said. So first, Nick Saban said, self-proclaimed is not the same as actually earning it. We've only had one undefeated team, and that is really hard to do. He's talking about him at Alabama. They've only had one undefeated team during all these Natty runs. So I have a tremendous amount of respect for their team and what they were able to accomplish, and they can make every claim that they should have been in the playoff. I get that. But we have a system, and it's not fair to the people who went through the system and earned their way playing really, really good teams. I mean, really good teams and really tough games. It's not quite fair to them for somebody else to just decide to claim a national championship. And then Scott Frost was asked about it by KETV in Omaha, or at least they were the ones that put out the quote. And Scott Frost said, obviously he's the head coach at Nebraska now. Scott Frost said, Alabama probably has one or two national championships they claim that weren't necessarily recognized by everybody. So what he's referring to there is Bama's Natties from back in the day when, I mean, as recently as like the early 2000s, the way a national champion was decided was like by AP poll vote, which is just crazy.
By a freaking newspaper poll.
Yeah, literally by a newspaper poll.
That's how UW got their fraudulent title, by the way. Shout out to all you Husky fans.
Ray Lewis deserved that title, man. The U. But so anyways, that was kind of crazy to think about, but it's true. I mean, and you know, so Alabama has like, I don't remember what the number is, like 17 or 18 national titles as a school in football. But a lot of those were back in the 60s, 70s and 80s when there were like seven good D1 teams and it was decided by a vote. So that's basically what Scott Frost was saying.
When they were playing with leather helmets.
Yeah. When they were running the triple option with leather helmets. But anyways, man, I don't know. It's just everything Saban says is just polarizing because he's Saban. Yeah, I think it's been kind of a funny back and forth with UCF and Bama, and UCF's clearly like, I don't want to say getting under Saban's skin, because I've watched the actual video, not just read quotes, but I've like watched the video of him responding, and he's not like freaking out or anything. He's delivering what he's saying in a, you know, a very modest manner. But it's just kind of a funny back and forth, and you got to give UCF credit for getting themselves on the map.
Yeah, you got to give them supreme credit. They went undefeated. They beat Auburn, who beat Alabama and Georgia, and they had a hell of a season. And I honestly, I'm all for the national championships. I'm all for that whole movement that UCF did. And as you mentioned, a lot of claims from a lot of teams back in the day when there wasn't really a legitimate system in place. So I don't have a problem with it. I think it's cool that they are getting under Saban's skin a little bit. Pretty petty response from a guy that is maybe the best college football coach of all time. It's like, dude, if you're Saban, why even care about that? If someone asks you that question, which I don't know why people are still asking that question, but it turned out to be a gold mine, then don't even respond. Just ignore it. But if he feels like he has to address it, I mean, that should tell you something, right?
Totally. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, everything Saban says is just like interesting to me because I love college football so much, and it, you know, people are always trying to come at Bama just because they're
people are always trying to bring down the SEC. I don't get it. I mean, it's just it's the best. Yeah. It's a dominant conference.
It just means more, baby. That slogan
just bigger down there.
It just means more down here, man. Which it kind of does. I wish. I really wish they would come out west and just play a game. Like, I get, I mean, they would have still roundhoused UFC even if that game was at the Coliseum last year, but, or was it 2 years ago? Sorry, two years ago when they opened up in Jerry's World and beat him like 52-6 and literally ended Max Brown's football career, which they do to a lot of quarterbacks. But gosh, I wish they would come out west. But anyways, yeah, I mean, dude, Bama's the best. The SEC's the best. Just deal with it, man. The Will Cain Court of Law, AP. What do you got for us here?
I was watching Fake Take the other day. It's a funny nickname that you created, by the way, Fake Take. And he's on there every now and then. And he's just like Stephen A. The two of them talk a lot, but they don't really say anything. They have a bunch of big-time vocabulary that they kind of throw in there that are meaningless. It's basically two pretentious dudes that take like 20 to 30 seconds to actually get to their point. They make a point that's not good anyway, and then they end with some ridiculous kind of open-ended statement or question, and I guess it's usually Kellerman on the other side or the host. It just kind of left there like, all right, well, you know, what do I do now? Like, they say it so matter of fact, like, they're right. No one else
just like can't even believe what they just heard. They're like, okay.
Kellerman's sitting there like, Jesus, I sold my soul to the devil and left Sports Station for this show.
He sold his soul for a 7-digit salary.
Sold his soul. And Sports Nation was such a good show with him, Marcellus.
I like Marcellus a lot.
Marcellus is a goat, man. That guy's awesome. And even Beetle wasn't like terrible on that show, even though she didn't really do anything. But that's another story. Beetle making $5 million a year. Wow. My point is, Will Cain is fake tough and fake smart. And Stephen Hay is fake smart and fake tough. And these two dudes just, I can't believe that this is a legitimate TV show. Like, these two dudes just screaming at each other, screaming into the mic, and just saying a bunch of words that don't mean anything. At least Kellerman actually, I mean, like, he sold it. Obviously, he sold out, and he's kind of starting to pick up on this whole, like, First Take attitude with his demeanor and the way
he... Yeah, he's getting better at it. You know, he's getting extra stern after he gets
his take. Yeah, and the way he greases things up and takes deep breaths before he talks, like he's about to read
the Declaration of Independence. That's a major key of First Take, is just, like, acting like you're about to deliver some war message or something.
Like, they're about to deliver the State of the Union address. I mean, honestly, it's embarrassing. But no one does it better than these two goofs, Cain and Stephen A, man. Ah. It's just sad, dude. It really is. And it is a huge, huge part of why Preston and I need to save this industry. #SaveTheIndustry.
We're trying to save the industry. So, you know, each of these hot take artists, they have like a different way of greasing it up and delivering it. So like the Nick Wright is to just like speak like whatever he says is a fact and it's not an opinion. And there's no way it couldn't be an opinion. There's no way it couldn't be a fact. I mean, it's just an absolute fact. Okay. Shannon, in my estimation, just kind of screams as loudly as he can.
He's at least funny though.
Oh, he's funny.
I mean, the rest of these guys suck. Shannon's funny.
No, I legitimately like Shannon.
Me too.
Like, I actually like him.
Me too.
Skip, you know, he just makes stuff up. Like, it's like he's acting. That's what he's doing. He's literally just acting.
Skip is the godfather of all this, by the way. He's the one that invented this whole.
He created all these shenanigans. The fraudulent school of acting.
Skip is the reason, the very reason to the core of why we are in this position that we are to try and save this industry.
Yeah. So thank you, Skip, actually. Yeah. Kellerman. It's weird because he's there, man.
It sucks, but he's there.
No, I know.
Same with Coward.
I don't want to go that far in Coward yet. Some of his takes have been... That Speak for Yourself show, like, I don't... It's not really his... He's just, like, answering the questions that are thrown at him. It's not like those aren't his takes. He's just, like, he has to answer those crazy questions. You know what I mean? But anyways, going back to Kellerman.
And going back to Whitlock.
Going back to Whitlock. So going back to Kellerman, he made his name with his analysis of boxing, which he's really good at.
That's right.
And I actually met this dude a couple times when I spent that summer in LA interning for ESPN. He's a nice dude. He was really good on Sports Nation. He had his own radio show with Marcellus. It was called Max Marcellus on ESPN LA. And now he just kind of sold himself, and it sucks, but he totally sold himself. And then Will Kane, all this is getting back to Will Kane. So Will Kane originally, the first time I ever heard of this dude was when he guest hosted on Russillo's show, which used to be SVP and Russillo, and then Russillo and Kanell, and then just the Russillo show once Kanell got laid off for some weird reason that I will never understand, because Russillo and Kanell is the best radio show going back then. And so then Will Kane comes on, and I start looking this dude up. So he has a law background. He's from the Texas area. He has a law background. And then I listen to him talk, and this is what he does on Fake Take 2. He acts like he's in a court of law. It's like, dude, we're just talking about sports. And he said something today. I texted it to you. I can't remember exactly what it was. Something about, like, the truth isn't always right, and it's complex, and it's a mystery. And I'm like, dude, we're not in a court of law here.
Dude, that is just utter nonsense is what that is.
Yeah. So anyways, that's my take on Kane. It's just like, dude, we're just trying to listen to some sports talk, man. You don't have to act like it's the end of the world or we're in a court of law. And we got a 25-year prison sentence on the line here, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, Kane, it's the 21st century, bud. You got to appeal to the millennials. And just going back to Kane, man. going back to Whitlock, folks. If you want us to make this a regular segment, hashtag Will Kane Court of Law. There are no shortage of opportunities for us to expose this dude. I mean, he's on First Take almost every day. Every single time he opens his mouth, it's a shake your head moment. So we can definitely bring up some. I mean, we can reserve the worst media take of the week for other candidates, because there's plenty of the actors out there, plenty of the frauds that we need to expose. But Will Kane might just be deserving of his own segment.
Agreed. Okay, finally, the fake tough guy segment.
Everyone's favorite.
Everyone's favorite, award-winning. People are blowing up our mentions with this one. AP, what do you got for us this week? Who's your fake tough guy?
Morrison Double T from Game 2 in the ECF. Now, these two are regular offenders on the fake tough guy segment, but nothing was funnier than when Morris drove to the rack, got the and one on Double T, and as they're both on the ground, he screams in Tristan Thompson's face, like this total weak fake tough guy scream right at him. And Tristan Thompson is like kind of like laughing, but like gets up and then like starts to mug, like he like sticks his like kind of goofy, awkward potato looking body out, and like as in like he's trying to fight. And it's like, all right, both of you fake tough guys, settle down here. Morris, you and your brother are two of the biggest fake tough guys in the league. Neither of you ever want that smoke, ever. And Thompson, not only are you the biggest scumbag of all time, but you're also fake tough, dude. We all remember when you kissed David West in the finals last year. You're not going to throw a punch at anyone. You don't actually want to fight. Both of you just get the hell out of here.
But he kissed David West in the finals? I actually don't remember that.
You remember that scuffle in Game 5 that him and David West got into, and they like showed the slow-mo on ABC, and their like lips kind of touched each other? You don't remember that?
No. Uh-uh.
Last year, go look it up.
Okay. I got checked out before Game 5 because I was like, this thing's over.
You checked out when Durant buried that Game 3, that Game 3 jumper?
Kevin Durant's about to win this title. Like, I got to check out. All right. Yeah, I agree with you. I'm going with I like the Morris one. I don't really understand the Tristan Thompson
is there, man. Come on.
I don't see it. But I respect your fake tough guy takes. You know,
gotcha.
I do.
I appreciate it.
I'll stay in my lane there. My other one is the other Marcus on the Celtics, Marcus Smart. Okay. I mean, this dude every game, for some reason, takes like 8 threes a game and maybe makes one of them. He would be such a frustrating player to coach. It's like, well, why are you shooting threes? And he's just in the middle of everything, dude. He's just running into people. I think it was Game 1 where he just kind of slammed himself into one of those Cavs role players, like just for the heck of it. And he's just always on the ground. He just looks like he wants to fight someone. So Marcus Smart is my...
That's because he like legitimately does want to fight someone. That guy's insane.
Yeah. So Marcus Smart is my my fake tough guy. There aren't a ton of fake tough guys outside of Durant, no offense, on in the Western Conference Finals. I'm trying to think of some. Did the Rockets have any?
They surely have one.
I don't think PJ Tucker's a fake tough guy.
PJ Tucker's a real tough guy.
Yeah, I actually do. I actually like PJ Tucker.
I love PJ Tucker. And he's not the self-proclaimed shoe king. He like legitimately is the shoe king. That guy shows up with some of the most exclusive shoes every single night. Not that it's hard for rich people to have exclusive shoes, but he still does it, which is awesome.
Did you see what he was wearing, his shirt on inside the other night?
No, I didn't.
They had him on inside the NBA after game two, and he was it was fresh, man. I don't even know what it was, but it was some like crazy Gucci Versace, like just dripping.
That's awesome. Shirt,
and it was like.
Did you see he was wearing the Oregon Jordans the other night?
Yeah, he had the Oregon Jordans on.
Awesome.
Shout out PJ Tucker. I like that guy. Mate, is Nene fake tough?
Oh, Chris Paul's fake tough, dude. I almost forgot about that. Chris Paul is for sure fake tough.
Yeah, I think he is kind of fake tough. He's a pretty good defender, though. You got to give him that.
Yeah, for sure. But he's fake tough.
Yeah, he's fake tough. Him and the Clippers. The Clippers and the Wizards. When Chris Paul was on the Clippers, and then the Wizards as currently constructed, I think those are the two biggest fake tough guy teams that I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, you have to go back to the Jazz team that couldn't beat the Bulls in terms of fake tough guy teams.
Yeah.
How much does Stockton hate Jordan, by the way? I mean, that guy... I bet that guy would seriously punch Jordan in the face if he saw him today. Like still, him and so Carl much Malone. Hatred, so much. Oh yeah, so much hatred for MJ. Like as the single-handedly the reason that neither of those clowns got a ring, dude. And they're great players too, Hall of Fame players.
Yeah, Malone's like all time in like many categories, or like right at the top. It's crazy.
And they just could not get it done. Damn.
Let's see. I'm trying to think of a fake tough guy on the Rockets.
Yeah, other than CBP,
Gerald Green's kind of fake tough a little bit.
Gerald Green just kind of looks insane, kind of like Marcus Smart.
Yeah, he actually just kind of looks like a psycho. He actually looks like he'd be just down to brawl. Yeah. There's some value to that, dude. Matt Barnes basically made his entire career off of just like being down to brawl.
Yeah, Matt Barnes was in the league for a while. That guy kept collecting checks.
Yeah.
He even won a title with the Warriors last year.
It's because teams were like, oh, we need a fake tough guy in case we actually get in a fight. Let's bring in Matt Barnes.
Matt Barnes is like, yeah, I'm a good 3-and-D guy. They're like, we wouldn't go that far, but here's a vet minimum.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, Matt Barnes, man. That's funny. All right, man. Good stuff. We got anything else to add to this one? But yeah, this is a great pod with a special guest, Don Mothlon, and everything.
Man, another great pod. Just we got to keep it up, man. Content, promote the brand and our likeness. And we just absolutely have to keep saving this industry one day at a time, folks. Rome wasn't built in one day, and this industry will not be saved in one day. But remember, not all heroes wear capes. We need your effort, too, to our award-winning listeners. Thank you, guys.
That was a great message. Yeah, and here's the other thing, too. Just start using that hashtag save the industry. I've seen it's actually picking up a little trend on Instagram. It's probably picking up a trend on Twitter. If you see, if you see something media wise where there's just some unbelievably ridiculous hot take out there or just ridiculous take, go ahead and hashtag save the industry and tag us at Tony in the Field, and we'll give you a special shout out on the pod.
Yeah, for sure. If you want to come on too, we'll have you on the show. We can break it down.
Yeah. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. Tony in the Field, May 17th. Keep following on all social platforms at Tony in the Field on Twitter and Instagram. Tony in the Field on SoundCloud. Tony in the Field on iTunes. And I'm at PC_Highfield on Twitter. And he is at AP Sports 1. AP underscore Sports 1? I can't remember. There's
no underscore AP there. Underscore Sports 1, yeah.
Yeah. We'll keep it up, and thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll see you guys next week.